excerpt of a powerful speech from the floor of the Senate Tuesday as he called on conservative members of his own party to stop obstructing voting rights legislation. Reverend Warnock is also pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, which was the spiritual home of Dr. Martin Luther King and his father. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Massoud, and Mary Conlon. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormack. You can go to democracynow.org for all of our shows, and also check us out on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. I'm Amy Goodman. Remember, wearing a mask is an act of love.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KABU. Consider adding KABU to your will, or add KABU as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KABU along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KABU to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift. Contact us at 503-231-8032 or email development@kabu.fm to notify us of your plans.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM dial. This is The Gap. My name is Tammy. I am your co-host for today. And with me is the lovely, fantastic, jubilant, brilliant, genius, Althea. How are you, Althea?
Hello, good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm well. I am caffeinated.
Okay. that I feel like that bodes well for the next hour.
Yes, between the caffeine and the intro song, of course. Oh, feeling good. Great to be here. And I just wanted to remind all the listeners that we are still in the midst of our end of the year drive. So if you'd like to make a donation, you can do that by going to kboo.fm/give. Your donation really makes everything happen here, from the lights to sustaining and making these programs thrive. Like I said, you can go to kboo.fm/give. Or, of course, if you'd like to keep it old school, you can just mail in a donation to 20th Southeast 8th Ave. Ooh, that's a tongue twister little.
You got there.
Thank you. And, of course, the good old text to donate. You can text KBOO to 44321. All your donations are very much welcomed, needed. And I'd like to also say a huge thank you to some of our donors, Rick, Lidwina, I hope I said that right, Andrew and Rod, thank you so much. We're getting inching away into our goal of 45,000 wow, and we really hope that we can make it, and your support is how we stay on the air. So thank you, and again, the website is kboo.fm/give, and on to our program for today.
Yes. So regular listeners of The Gap know that we like to do things in two halves. So our first half today will be a lovely interview. And then in the second half of the show, around 8:30, we'll be opening up the phone lines for our community question. But before we get there, we have a great interview today. We're speaking with Claire Rosciato, the host and producer of Row on the Rocks, which investigates what a post-Roe v. Wade Oregon will look like, where many Oregonians already have limited access to abortion health care. It's a podcast project that is premiering next week on KABU, and Claire's with us. Hi, Claire.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm awake.
Okay. that is all we can ask for at 8 in the morning. So, yeah, I'm excited to get to talk with you about this podcast project. Can you start by giving us a little bit of background? Like, how did you get interested in doing this kind of investigation?
For sure. So I've been in conversation, having conversations about this issue going back to, you know, college and before that. But I got really serious about it when I was studying to be a journalist at the University of Oregon. I grew up Catholic with a very specific understanding of reproductive health, about abortions. And I wanted to educate myself. So over the past year or so during the pandemic, I got really interested in this issue, seeing how legislation is going to play out and already is playing out and creating very serious barriers for people who need access to abortion health care.
Right. Yeah. Because, I mean, you and I have talked about this project off air.
Yes.
And it was, you know, already something that you were working on before kind of the what we've seen in the past 4 months being these abortion trigger laws, the model of Texas being semi-successful, and that the Supreme Court this session is hearing two different abortion cases.
Right.
So let's delve into that a little bit. Can you tell us, what are abortion trigger laws?
So abortion trigger laws are laws that have passed in at least 12 states, including in Idaho, our state neighbor, that will automatically ban abortion if Roe is overturned. So in the event that Roe is overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court in states like Idaho, within 30 days, abortion will be completely illegal with some exceptions, though there's skepticism about those exceptions.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that I know you are going to be delving into in the podcast
right.
project, is that relationship between Idaho and Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are lucky to live in a relatively progressive state. There is a Democratic supermajority in both of the houses of our state legislature. That doesn't mean that, you know, whatever is happening in one state doesn't impact another. Can you tell us what might that look like?
Absolutely. So right now there's already barriers, especially for people who are living in rural Oregon and eastern Oregonians. And
what are those barriers?
For sure. So say someone's living in eastern Oregon and they need access to abortion. It could take up to 4 hours for them to travel within their own state here in Oregon, or far less, maybe an hour or less, to travel to Idaho, which has 3 abortion clinics. But if they go to Idaho, they have to follow very specific and restrictive laws, which is a 24-hour waiting period, and they have to have their physician has to provide what's called informed consent. So they have to be offered an ultrasound of the pregnancy, and a pamphlet that's state-created that describes stages of embryonic and fetal development and also describes risks of an abortion.
Right. So, but if perhaps they were not, if they sought out an abortion, obviously further away, but in their own state,
right,
they wouldn't be facing those kinds of things. And what is the impact of the 24-hour waiting period, of this quote-unquote informed consent?
So overall, all of these barriers involve a lot of added costs. So whether or not someone, say, in Eastern Oregon chose to get an abortion here in Oregon or in Idaho, there's the cost of not only the procedure, but travel if they need to stay overnight, which you might if you traveled 4 hours somewhere else in Oregon, and also definitely if you had to stay in Idaho and wait mm-hmm. 24 hours to
right.
get
taking
an abortion.
Taking time off work as well.
Taking time off work, childcare if you have children, being even allowed to take time off work, the loss of income from taking time off.
Right. Those are definitely things that would be impactful. So, okay, say that this, you know, the Supreme Court goes the way of weakening Roe or overturning it altogether.
Right.
And this trigger law in Idaho goes into effect. What is the impact then?
So the impact here in Oregon?
Yeah. So well, I mean, I have an assumption about what it would be in Idaho.
Right. Well, that means what we just talked about, there being two options, while not great, would remove one of them. So
mm-hmm.
Eastern Oregonians would no longer have the option to go to Idaho for abortion health care. And many folks in other neighboring states, including definitely in Idaho, would seek out abortion access here in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Oregon studies cited by Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon, that would be up to 235% increase in out-of-state patients if Roe was overturned.
Wow. And so, I mean, and I don't know if this is within the scope of your research, but
mm-hmm.
what is the impact of that from, like, a clinic's perspective?
Right. So that's something I'll definitely be investigating more later on in this podcast. But there's definitely the concern that this it already is in other states, but will definitely overwhelm the healthcare system here in Oregon. They're seeing that in states like Oklahoma with the Texas ban.
Yeah. Yeah, talk a little bit about that, because, I mean, that's where, you know, a lot of the national focus has been in the conversation about abortion recently.
Right. So with the bans in Texas, certain organizations like the National Abortion Fund are trying to provide the best geographical, you know, option for mm-hmm. folks who need access. So that means for many people in northern Texas going to Oklahoma. But Oklahoma has restrictions, and they've had at least 3 failed attempts to very seriously limit abortion access. So kind of, in a far more serious sense, kind of similar to Oregon and Idaho with, you know, the best option is not necessarily the most accessible option.
Right. And curiosity I have about the Idaho law, is it formulated similarly to Texas? Because I know what has made Texas especially pernicious is that the enforcement mechanism is on citizens, not the state, because Roe restricts the state from enforcing violations of the right to privacy, as in denying abortion. Is Idaho modeled the same way?
For the trigger law ban?
Yeah.
So with the trigger law ban, it is modeled. All of the states have a very similar model in that abortion will be completely illegal.
Mm.
But they have certain differences. So in Texas, there is the one only exception is for the endangerment of a pregnant person.
Mm-hmm.
In Idaho, it's for the life endangerment of a pregnant person and rape and incest.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said earlier, there's skepticism about those exceptions.
Yeah, because I know that the quote-unquote exceptions, whether they're included or not, is definitely a big part of the conversation.
Right.
And perhaps in some way trying to detangle it from being such a black and white issue, either you're pro-choice or anti-choice. Where does that factor in, and what is that skepticism you're talking about?
So with the skepticism, I was speaking with folks who are working in Idaho trying to provide filling the gap for the abortion access in Idaho. There's the concern that even though there is written into the trigger law ban in Idaho an exception for people who've been raped or have incestuous rape, that there are barriers to then proving that that is your circumstance. So filing a police report, going through what can be very traumatic, the process of a rape kit, having a medical exam. And as we know nationally, and even here in Oregon, sexual violence is vastly underreported, and mm-hmm. there are so many different barriers in terms of reporting and the burden of proving that you face sexual trauma.
Right. And therefore deserve to have the right to to have ownership of your own body. Tammy, you want to jump in here? You got any questions for Claire?
Yeah, I mean, this is really interesting, and I do have a lot of questions, but to keep it specifically on your research and stuff, what, I guess, from talking with people, what seems to be the opinion from, I guess, both sides of the conversation of the fact that citizens, like people, are just kind of being used as a tool of the state, like an arm of the state, in order to kind of circumvent the existing, you know, status quo?
Right. People are angry. People involved in the reproductive justice movement are angry that they feel like pawns in a political game, and it's their lives being affected and, you know, seriously impacted, not necessarily the lives of these legislators and politicians who are, you know, gaining points for passing laws that, you know, boost their voter base.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Versus, on the other hand, you know, organizations like here in Oregon, Oregon Right to Life, while they may not necessarily agree with the more serious laws like in Texas, you know, they see it as a win that abortion is illegal.
Right, by any means
right.
that they can get it. And I think it's worth pointing out at this point, you know, abortion is a long-standing thing that is happening and will continue to happen regardless of how,
whether it's legal or not. So
it will always be accessible for those who are rich, and it becomes more traumatic and dangerous for folks who do not have perhaps the means to, you know, have access to it in the kind of climate that we're talking about.
And that's something that I think doesn't get talked about enough, is regardless of how you feel about abortion, the very serious medical impact that will, we already are seeing, that that will definitely occur if Roe is overturned, mm-hmm. and the serious situations in which people need abortions in order to save their lives.
Right. And so, I mean, you did talk to some pro-life folks.
Yes.
What is that experience of trying to have this kind of conversation with them when I know that there are just, you know, even different language used for the same thing?
I think that's the key thing. It's different language. It's a different perspective. It's one that I'm very familiar with, having grown up in the way that I did in a very Catholic community. And I understand what they're saying because of that. So their focus is not just on the potential life yet to be born, but also, and they use the language mother, of the person giving birth or who could give birth. And so that can be really challenging, having that conversation. That's a hard thing to argue with, that you care about two lives versus one. So yeah, that was an interesting aspect of my conversation, specifically with Oregon Right to Life, understanding their perspective, and then, you know, challenging them on certain things, like, you know, like what I just said earlier, serious medical situations. They see that as a non-issue because of advanced medicine being able to prevent that from even being an issue, needing an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
That advanced medical services make that a non-issue.
Right, regardless of, you know, case-by-case basis.
Right.
Obviously, a person's health is very complicated. It's not just something that we can science wave our hand at and it goes away. Yeah, that's very interesting. So I'm interested in, so I was not raised religious, mm-hmm. and I come from a very liberal area of Seattle. Can you tell me a little bit about, like, what the rhetoric is that you grew up with?
For sure. So I grew up being told that a life is very precious, and how, you know, not just for my family, but I went to Catholic schools,
mm-hmm.
and how cruel it is to take the life of an unborn child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was always framed, as if a child was in, you know, very late stages versus a very more scientific understanding of there being actual stages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's largely what I was surrounded by, that kind of language.
Right. And, you know, I know your podcast project is working on, you know, picking apart the black and white and figuring out where all of those shades of gray are, and that, you know, perhaps most people are not engaging too deeply. And I mean, I myself feel a certain aversion to, like, getting in too deep on any of it.
Totally.
Because one, you feel like you're in the weeds, and two, it is, like, an uncomfortable subject regardless of what side of the, I don't want to say what side of the debate, wherever you
it's a
fall.
A camp of thought.
A camp of thought. Thank you. I like that. Thought camp. Welcome to thought camp. So what are some of those things that you think are really important to, like, figuring out what that gray area is? Are there, like, myths that you think are worth dispelling there?
I think that's been the most interesting part of my interviewing process, is having my own assumptions, you know, completely debunked. Like, we're talking about how I grew up Catholic, so in my own frame of mind and reference, religious people are typically, in my mind growing up, are pro-life. And that was very consistent with conversations that I had with all sorts of folks. But that's not necessarily the case. There's so much nuance to this. I think there's, from the media, just everyday conversations, it's so structured to be pro-life versus pro-choice, and Democrats versus Republicans, and so on, where, in fact, and we saw this on December 1st here in Portland, many folks who are Christian or of other faith, you know, denominations or affiliations are pro-life, strong and fierce advocates of legal and accessible abortion. And that's been a really fascinating aspect of my interviewing. And people of all different ages fitting into that more nuanced area of being religious, but also very pro-life.
And can you talk a little bit more about the actual episodes and what it was like doing these interviews, and who are some of the people or organizations that you got to speak with in your research?
Yeah, so I talked to quite a few reproductive justice pro-choice organizations. So that includes Planned Parenthood, Advocates of Oregon, and the Northwest Abortion Access Fund, which provides funding to folks all over the Pacific Northwest here in Oregon and also Idaho, Washington, and Alaska. And let's see, who else did I talk to a lot of people. Oh, and the Oregon Women's Campaign School. I want to highlight the Oregon Women's Campaign School was also something really interesting that I learned about, which is sort of like a protective abortion boot camp for politicians and advocates of abortion. Their whole school is set up to not take abortion rights here in Oregon for granted and to keep it protected, because there's a lot of legislation, particularly in the Oregon Senate, from Republicans to undermine and eradicate legal abortion here in Oregon. So yeah, those are the sources that I spoke with, and there was a really good understanding from all of those folks about how we're not isolated here in Oregon. We're not this, you know, liberal utopia that exists unto itself, that we affect other people and we are affected by other states.
Right. And that part I think is really interesting, because I think there's other contexts in which that makes a lot of sense, obviously, but I think it's maybe a little bit more nebulous on certain issues like this. And I don't know, that's very interesting, but it's also like one of those things that is obviously difficult from like a legislative perspective, because you can only, if you're in the state legislature, you can only legislate about your state.
Right.
But that idea of not being an island.
It's all kind of a blueprint.
Yeah. A metaphorical island, might I add. not a literal island. Yeah, very cool. So yeah, I'm very excited for your podcast project. It's going to be in two phases, yeah?
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
For sure. So the first couple episodes that you mentioned that'll be coming out next week are very centered on what we've been talking about, the relationship between Oregon and Idaho. And then later in the spring, the goal is to get it out before the U.S. Supreme Court announces their decision on the Mississippi case.
Mm-hmm.
That next phase of the podcast will take a much deeper look into the very national impact of overturning Roe and what's already going on in states like Texas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So that it'll take a really deep look into that and the legal aspect and what Roe even is.
Right. And so, yeah, we've talked about the Texas law. We've talked about the Idaho abortion trigger law. What can we say about the Mississippi one that the Supreme Court is hearing?
About like
what is the context of that law?
Yeah, so the context of that law is that they want to limit abortions to 15 weeks. And from my understanding from conversations from folks, particularly those who come from legal background, that if the U.S. Supreme Court upholds the Mississippi law, depending on what they specifically uphold within that law, because there's so many different variables with that.
Right.
There's things they could choose to uphold but not uphold.
Mm-hmm.
If they uphold the 15-week law of Mississippi, that would lead to overturning Roe, because you're then redefining what Roe actually is, which currently is allows abortions up to 24 weeks.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, and I mean, I think that is, yeah, something to, a good reminder of what the Supreme Court is up to, is that they, you know, it's not just like a thumbs up, thumbs down. There's a lot of different ways that they can approach tackling a law like that.
Right. And we don't know what that looks like. We don't know if they're going to pick and choose. We don't know if it's going to be, you know, everything that Mississippi is asking for be upheld or not.
Right. Yeah, it's, these are interesting times.
Yes, they are.
From that perspective.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about kind of going back to your personal background and how you were raised when it comes to this subject. I just wanted to know how your perspective has shifted, if at all, while doing the research. And also, like, have you taken, like, any of this information back to, I don't know, like, your family or something? Or are they, like, how are they reacting to it?
It's a good question. I waited several months to actually tell my folks about this project. Not because, you know, I didn't think that they would necessarily disapprove of it, but without providing, you know, personal information, just because that's not fair to them. There are things involving this subject that have personally affected my family and has, regardless of their religious faith and background, has shaped their understanding of how they view abortion and, in their mind, the sanctity of life. But I definitely had some really interesting conversations with members of my family that involved challenging their perspective after years of kind of having my own perspective challenged as a child. I was an interesting kid who had debates with my parents about this issue.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, it definitely has informed me and, like I said earlier, provided more nuance for myself and not seeing this in such a black and white way. When it comes to religion, that religious people are always pro-life. That's just not the case. And yeah, I feel like this whole entire process has allowed me to see things in not such labeled box terms. If you fit into this category, you're not in this, you know, very sports-like mentality.
Right. And kind of, you know, in that same vein, if there are folks out there listening who, you know, are interested in learning more or like don't have a deep familiarity with the, you know, the politics and the intricacies, do you have like a recommendation of like where to start with learning more?
Yes. I would recommend doing what I was not taught to do.
Oh, okay.
Go on Wikipedia. Start with the basics.
Nice.
Yeah, I was always taught, don't do that. But no, start with the basics. Ask the very simplest questions like I did. What is even an abortion? What does it mean to be pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
And what is Roe? What's legally being fought about right now? Just the very basics of the foundation in which is being threatened. You don't have to be a lawyer, you don't have to be a doctor, you don't have to be a quote expert or specialist in anything to understand this. And if you can, go to the library, pick up some books like I did.
Mm-hmm.
Go to Powell's, support your local bookstores.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think that those are great advices for getting curious, you know.
Yeah.
I think there is, you know, on whatever part of, you know, the scope of what it could mean, wherever you land on that, there is a lot of like emotion involved and like a lot of, you know, rhetoric appealing to emotion and making it seem that it is
absolutely
one way or the other.
Absolutely.
I think it's really fascinating in how you mentioned that to speak on the same subject, different camps of thoughts use different words, which is very powerful when you're talking about something, you know, so serious. And I think sometimes it can get really, we can get tunnel vision and just think of like ourselves and our families and how we view the world and forget that there are people out there who can't afford to live the life that you have and frankly probably don't want it, you know? So to be able to just, and like we said before, even if it's not legal, abortion will probably still happen like it has been for a very, very long time. And it'll be really negligent for us to have this technology and the means to do these abortions safely and to just say, no, we're not going to do that. You
right.
just go ahead and die in your, you know, hot bath drinking gin or something. Like, really inhumane ways to that things that, like, people have had to deal with trying to give themselves abortion. So
right.
incredibly important to preserve this thing that, you know, it's just to think that it can be taken away so quickly is really terrifying, because when a person does become pregnant, I doubt, and they don't want it, I doubt that their first thing is like, oh, I'm going to reach out to my congressperson. Like, no, they want to, you know, get an abortion and deal with the trauma that brings onto itself.
And like Althea mentioned earlier, you know, we know this because we've seen this before abortion was, you know, fully legal in the United States. Rich people, people with, you know, politicians, people with already what seems like limitless access just in general, you know, financial power, they're always going to have access to abortion.
Right.
Definitely, yeah. And we can't have that happen. No, no, no.
Right. And it, yeah, just, you know, denying the reality of what what's going to happen if that if that does end up happening, these abortion trigger laws. Well, we are just about out of time, but Claire, I want to thank you so much for stopping by to tell us about your podcast project. We're speaking with Claire Rosciato, the host and producer of the podcast series Row on the Rocks. It is premiering next week on KABU, Wednesday and Thursday, the 22nd and the 23rd at 5 p.m. You can hear it here. You'll also be able to hear it on our website afterwards, focusing on what would a post-Roe v. Wade Oregon look like when, you know, many Oregons already have limited access to abortion health care, and our neighbors to the northeast, Idaho, would certainly have an impact on us. Claire, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
You are listening to The Gap on KBOO Portland. We're going to take a short musical break, and then we're going to hit the second half. Thanks for being with us.
Tuned into KBOO Portland. This is The Gap, and we were listening to a beautiful ditty called There's a Light.
Ooh, yeah, I really enjoyed that. I think I'm going to have to add it to my Spotify.
Oh,
very
don't
exciting.
Get...
exciting.
It's the Wrapped all over again.
The what? Oh, the Spotify Wrapped. We had like a whole half a show on Spotify Wrapped last year because we were so enamored and we did not talk about it this year.
It's good. It's a good algorithm. I like it.
Yeah,
make
I like
you
it
feel
too.
Like you're really unique and special and neat and mm-hmm. know this really cool underground music and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That is a feeling that I like feeling. I won't deny it.
Okay. I'm not like other girls. What can I tell you?
I am. Yeah, I'm so not like other girls. So anyway.
yes, but you are tuned into The Gap, and we were just speaking with Claire Rosciato about the upcoming podcast that will be airing here on KABU next week on the 22nd and 23rd at 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Row on the Rocks. So we can go on the website to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to remind everyone that we are still in the midst of our end of the year fund drive. If you are able and can and want to donate, please do. You can go online to kboo.fm/give. Or text your donation to 44321. Just text KABU to 44321. And all of your donations will go to everything here, from the lights to supporting programming and everything in between. So your donation is much, much, much appreciated.
Yeah, yeah. Your support goes to helping things like the podcast project that you're talking about, you know, taking a deeper look on some really important issues. So we really do appreciate it. KABU.fm/give or text KABU to 44321. All right, are we ready for the second half?
Part two.
Part two, people. Okay, so in the second half of the show, we will do a community question. So folks, if you would like to chime in, of course you can. Our phone number is 503-231-8187. But wait, let me tell you what we're talking about. That seems relevant at this juncture. We're talking about holiday anxieties. Last week, our community question was about gift giving strategies, giving, receiving. What are you giving or receiving this year? But yeah, holiday anxieties. If you have holiday anxieties that you're facing or tips to help cope with those, we'd love to hear it. 503-231-8187. You know, it's a stressful time of year. It's right coming to the end of the year. You know, folks are gathering for the holidays. There's definitely pressure to spend money. I know that a family member of mine reached out to me and said, you know, should I come to Christmas? Like, I can't, I just quit my job. I can't afford presents this year. Mm. And I was like, oh man, dude, like, I'm so sorry that that is even like the thought crossing your mind, you know, because, and like, but I also think that that was like something that I needed to affirm. Like, hey, if the choice is between you getting me a gift or you being there, I'd way rather you be there.
They felt like they shouldn't be there if they don't have presents. Yeah. Give. Oh my goodness. That's a real fear.
Yeah. And I said, hey, you help me with the gift wrapping on what I've been cooking up. We can say it's from both of us.
There's definitely a lot of ways to help out. And you can finish the community question because I don't want to get in it.
No, please. I mean, yeah, folks, if you have thoughts about holiday anxieties, tips for avoiding them, things that, you know, you're facing this holiday season, give us a call, 503-231-8187.
Thank you. And as a person who is perpetually having their funds invested in other things, like...
That is such an impersonal way of saying it. You know, I wish I could do something about it, but my funds are just being invested elsewhere.
Yes.
Kind of the thing that I'm dealing with.
That's what, let's just call it that way. I find that if someone needs something, like just volunteering just for something, being like, hey, do you need help? Like, mm-hmm. I can have a car, or I can come early, or I can help clean up afterwards.
Yeah.
And it really makes a huge difference, especially for like whoever it is that's hosting. So, mm-hmm. Just volunteering your time is something that I've found to be just as impactful as a gift, you know? And also, I don't know how to give gifts. Can't even say these words.
Well, that's what last week's episode
was. Yeah, there you go.
For.
I learned from people calling in about how to find the perfect gift for a person. But your time means a lot, you know?
Definitely.
It can mean a lot to someone.
Yeah. And that was like one of my things that I was, you know, suggesting to this family member of mine is like, dude, like not that I don't know, I feel like coupons get a bad rap, you know, but there are also some things that it's like, hey, if you offered to do something with me, I'd be super down. Like, you want to clean my car with me? Let's find out what junk is in there. That's,
oh, like those coupons, like the love coupons. It's like,
yeah,
oh, yeah,
you're like one back rub. My mom cashes those in too much, so I don't give those out anymore. I can't be bothered. But
usually the problem is not using the coupons.
Yeah.
Just so you have the
you lost the coupons. You can't find them. It's basically a gift card. You gave it away for free. But yeah, that's definitely an option as well. And I think also, you know, if folks are celebrating Christmas or whatever gift giving holiday, we're coming up on it. So I think that like communicating early that, you know, whatever your spending limit is, or voicing a preference for, you know, a white elephant, a Secret Santa situation, so that or even a financial cap on what gifts are going to cost, I think is a good thing to advocate for yourself, for your loved ones who may not be able to advocate for themselves in that way.
I think you'd be surprised at how many people would probably share that sentiment and just don't feel comfortable vocalizing it, or don't want to. I don't like that there's so much shame around it, you know. But again, mm-hmm. I mean, money, shame, it's just so, you know, look at the world we live in. It's if you don't have it, then, you know, you shouldn't exist, is what the sentiment is, really. But you also have this really great link that I'm looking at from Kaiser, where there's like,
yeah, my healthcare provider was like, hey, are you stressed about the holidays? Here's some ideas.
They already know. And financial stress of gift giving is definitely on there. And the first one kind of surprised me, but I can see it as political disagreements. Mm. Like, oh my, yeah, we are definitely in a supercharged time. And it would really suck to like not see your parent because you're just worried about being attacked for your opinions or vice versa, you know? So, man, you know, that's a bummer, but it's real.
Yeah.
It's a real one.
Well, and hey, setting healthy boundaries, everybody, it takes work. And
oh,
I think,
yeah.
That, you know, you're kind of in an incubator in holidays, you know. That's why there's so many movies about family conflict at a particular time of year.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, obviously it's good to kind of reinforce those all year long. But yeah, like, hey, I don't feel comfortable talking about that. I don't want to discuss that right now.
And there's probably like a thing where like you're not being quote unquote polite, or you know, like, mm-hmm. But there's interesting tactics that they have written here. And again, like you said, it's definitely boundaries, setting boundaries. Mm-hmm. I find that boundaries are like sage. If you set them and then all of a sudden people leave, it's a good thing. You smudged them out of your life. It's a good thing.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's another thing that's difficult with boundaries, is that it's really delayed gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, I've had the experience where it's like, 2 years later, I realized that a boundary that I set was successful. And I was like, whoa, I haven't had the stress of this thing in my life for 2 years because somebody listened to what I did and did not like want to talk about anymore. And it's a little bit of delayed gratification. But yeah, hey, here's what they recommend. The boundary doesn't have to just be, you know, is someone going to listen to me when I say I don't want to talk about it anymore? You can excuse yourself. Take a walk. Take a loop around the neighborhood.
We know what the taking a loop around the neighborhood means in the holiday time.
Yeah, talk to somebody else. Get into another conversation. Make a new friend.
Sometimes. If there's a dog, go pet the dog.
Definitely petting pets is a good way to avoid, to make sure that your boundary setting is successful. But if folks are thinking about, you know, preparing for the holiday season, maybe seeing family, seeing old friends, and you want to talk with us about it, give us a call, 503-231-8187. You know, we're thinking about the stress of the holidays, anxieties. What are we facing, and how can we try to chip away at it and make sure that this is a time that is restful? Ideally, it's restful.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting time because you have kind of like the last almost week of the year where it's days off and stuff, so yeah. It's like, okay, I guess, should I wait till next year to address this? Like, it's kind of...
Yeah, I definitely am already experiencing, it's like, no, I'm going to do that in January. That's that's a 2022 task, Carathia.
I want to also go back to this link that you shared. Another thing that is written here is just the social stress of gatherings, like physically being in person, with COVID-19 and all the variants and stuff, which super stressful. And then kind of following that is kind of still grieving from loss, losing family members, or really just grief from the last 2 years. It's been really rough, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are ways, they say here, of honoring people that we've lost during the holiday and kind of remembering and celebrating their lives, which is really special. I'm going to take that.
Yeah.
Taking that.
Yeah. It can be a really hard thing to tackle and to know how to go about it, especially when, you know, maybe you're with like different parts of the family who may have, you know, different practices about, you know, their comfortability with talking about it. But I think, you know, they recommend like, hey, let's all go around the table and say one thing that we loved about this person or like a memory, you know, and like sharing that, I think is really nice. And, you know, I think a lot of these tips boil down to like, you know, take care of yourself. If you're feeling overwhelmed in any one of these, situations that we're talking about, like, hey, take a little walk,
pet
the dog,
drink some water,
watch a YouTube video. Yeah.
Eat an apple, you know?
Eat an apple. And always keep an apple in your bag in case you need to take a walk.
and it's not even just as an only child. For a lot of times, especially when I'm not where my mom lives, I spend holidays alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it never really bothered me until I was like, it bothers me that it doesn't bother me. And then I was just kind of... it was almost like I didn't know what I was missing out, so it didn't, you know, but once I've kind of was like, you know, well, let me just find a community of friends and like a chosen family. It's like, oh, wow, this is what I've been missing out for all these years. This is awesome. But even in your chosen family, it's like I would rather be in like a group where maybe I don't necessarily get along with absolutely everyone than to be alone. And so even it's not my direct family, but yeah, I mean, there's still sometimes boundaries you don't want to cross with people, and you kind of don't want to go there. So this isn't just for family. It's for friendships, whatever get-togethers that people are having this year. And I like the last one here is someone who drinks too much.
Yeah.
That is stressful. Oh, don't get me started about, oh my God. Drinking too much at a holiday party is not a cute look.
Yeah. And they recommend, hey, give yourself permission to leave if things are going poorly. Steer clear of whoever is making you uncomfortable. Those are all valid things to take on. If folks want to chime in on this conversation, 503-231-8187 is that phone number to call. There's one on here, not enough time to visit loved ones. Maybe you have divorced parents. I know I do. And in the first few years after that, it was like really difficult to navigate because they weren't necessarily like fully hashing it out between themselves about what their holiday expectations were. And so it came down to like a lot of disappointment on one side or the other, or like feeling like as the kid, like you have to pick and choose, right? Of like, well, okay, I guess we can be here for Christmas Eve, but on Christmas Day we're gonna go over here where I can spend 3 hours in this place and 3 hours in that place and have it be fair. Or, you know, also if you have divorced like two sides of your family with different means, I think that's also like can be difficult when you're getting fancy gifts in one place and, you know, a warm pair of socks, which are equally appreciable, but in the other side, I think that those are like difficult things to navigate. And the only way that I've like, you know, been able to get through it is like to try to have that conversation early before like heightened emotions kind of come in and like feeling like you're doing somebody wrong.
Yeah, it's expectations. Tough. That's I think kind of the key word here.
Keeping expectations low but hopes high, I think.
Is that from somewhere?
It's like expecting the worst but hoping for the best. Yeah. You know, keep your expectations low, and it's like, oh, we didn't even really argue this year. Heck yeah! Like, wow, we had a meal, and you know, nobody cried, nobody walked away. I love that for us.
I don't know. As again, just being an only child and coming from such a small family, because most of my family are abroad, it's like I'm like I kind of want to see the drama. Like, you know, like the uncle, and all of a sudden he's got like two girlfriends, and it's like, I don't know, like, and you know, the mom was like, I don't know, just, you know, like all the Madea stuff. Like, I wouldn't mind being a part of that. I'd love to watch that. Of course, when your emotions are entangled in that, it's probably less fun to deal with. But yeah, it seems like a hoot. And I mean, at the end, everyone has to come together and sing a final score, and then everyone gets along.
Yeah.
That's the
reality. Credits will roll at some point in and nobody talks about that.
Once, yes. But again, for our last few moments that we have left, we've got a little bit left.
Yeah,
I would
love
to
10 minutes.
Hear from you about your comments and thoughts around this. 503-231-8187. If you'd like to share some of your holiday anxieties and how you face them, how you deal with them, any tips from previous holidays that you've gathered.
I would bet that our listeners have some of that in the tank.
Right,
so
in
yes,
the shed of boundaries and stop signs, yeah.
503-231-8187. Let us know. There's inquiring minds are waiting for your thoughts on this.
Asking for a friend.
I think there's also like an aspect of like which holiday traditions like serve you well and which ones don't. I think there's like an aspect of that as well, and like you're saying, like, and like who you choose to celebrate with, that doesn't have to be static forever, you know. I think that there's like, because you start celebrating holidays when you're very young, it like kind of feels like it is cemented in that particular time. But I think that there is like opportunity to do different stuff, you know, and like people in your life that will support you doing something that you haven't had to do in other years as well.
So are you saying that you think, in your opinion,
yeah,
that we are all just trying to recreate our childhood holiday moments? And is that maybe why you think our expectations are so high?
Oh boy. I'm sitting in a swivel chair, not an armchair, for this psychology, okay? It's marginally less credible.
It's a, do you have the, I have, it's a swivel chair with arm.
Yeah, I do have armrests. Okay, well, that's like a two out of three.
But I'm going to be thinking about that one. I'm going to keep it back
that
burner.
Is, yeah, that's not, I didn't want to, you know, hit people too hard with that. But there's like, okay, this is a little tangential, but like, you know, people being like, oh, like Christmas back in the day. Oh, I missed the department stores in the 70s or whatever. like, it was so cool.
Oh,
like,
no, Macy's is still doing it.
There's still department stores. You can still go sit on Santa's lap. And he, like, one time I told Santa I wanted a vacuum cleaner because I was fun and different and I was not like other girls.
Did Santa was like...
It was a joke. It was a joke. Oh. But I don't think he took it as a joke. He, like, gave my mom a weird look. He's like, what kind of kid did you raise? That was a weird choice. You could have anything and you don't even want, like, a cool book or a doll or, like,
did you
even cash.
Can you ask Santa for cash?
I mean, you can. According to the lore, I don't think he has access to the U.S. Treasury Mint.
Maybe I'll take a Bitcoin. I don't care.
Santa cryptocurrency. Oh, no, it definitely exists.
He made it happen.
Don't invest in that. We're not giving financial advice about Santa-related cryptocurrency.
These are questions, just general questions.
But what was I saying? Oh, just that I forgot where I was going on my tangent. This is not good. But just that, like, you know, part of the magic of the holidays is related to, like, being a kid or, like, having the wonder or, like, being a new parent with young children and seeing their wonder.
Well, doing it all for the kids.
Right. And that, like, the meaning and the significance of your holidays is going to evolve over time because people are evolving and aging over time. And what we're super interested in changes all the time and figuring out, you know, I think there's also like knowing that some of that, like, you know, wonderment is sort of what brings us that feeling of like, you know, togetherness. And I think figuring out how to give that to other people, even if it's not the people that are like specifically in your little circle, I think is lovely. I love a good lights display. I'll just say it.
Yeah, well, there's a peacock lane, everything. And we do have a caller on the line. Sue, you are on the air with us.
Hi, I'm on my morning walk and I was listening to you. I just have one little tidbit that I have noticed in my lifetime that people get into these big groups and the elders sometimes get left out. So give some time to the elder in the room. They may not hear too well. They may tell you stories you've heard a dozen times. But give them some time and some energy because it's special. Christmas is special to them, too. And they sometimes feel kind of left out and lonely.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. I really appreciate that. That is a beautiful point and, you know, very true. Very true.
A very good reminder, for sure.
Well, have a nice holiday, both of you.
Thank you.
Sue.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
We'll see you, bye-bye.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that was Salamander Sue.
I think so. Salamander
Sue. Sue who saves salamanders. Great to hear from you.
But that's very true. I remember. Mm-hmm. Very true. I know personally for myself, I've never, and now, of course, growing up, I'm like, Grandpa, tell me the story. You know, I'm like, tell me all these stories. I want to, like, mm-hmm. document. I want to know everything. And I wish that I would have done that when he was a little bit younger, you know, a little bit more, youthful.
Spry.
Spry, thank
you. There
you
go, yeah.
Of course, he's super spry. But, yeah, exactly. It's not just about, yes. And to hear, like, family stories, mm-hmm. What holidays were like when they were younger. You know, things change. I mean, we see how much things change in the last 5 years, you know, getting a 30 or 40 or 60, 70 year perspective. It's very, you know, important.
Yeah, definitely. And I think also just like, no, I mean, I'm somebody who has a lot of, you know, younger people in my family. I'm like the oldest of some siblings. So there's always like a hyper energy or like somebody trying to do a performance or like, you know, like a lot of like go, go, go. And like making sure that we also take time to just, let's just sit and eat a Christmas cookie and talk about, you know, what's going on in everybody's life. And I think, yeah, like, I don't know, this is something that I teach people in the newsroom at KBOO, but like, you know, thinking about making sure that you're telling stories in like an accessible way, especially when there's like jargon and modern things that can get in the way of other people understanding it.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, we always talk about like thinking about, if you're telling a story, think about telling it at a dinner party where, like, you have friends there and your family, like, work colleagues, maybe your neighbor downstairs is there, and, like, you know, everybody's coming with a different base of knowledge. So, like, making it accessible for everyone to participate and engage in storytelling, mm-hmm. which is really what I'm all about.
I was engaged in you describing that.
Okay, good.
So I'm picturing at a party, and there's, I see my neighbors there, my grandpa, mm-hmm. my young friends. Yes, that's very important. And also, I think it helps in bringing people into the conversation. I know my grandma would always say things like, I just want to see y'all have fun, you know? And it's like, just watching us exist is like so much, but it's like, no, I'm pretty sure you've got some great, you know, I want to hear from you too.
Let's play cards. teach me how, okay.
Right.
Old people know cribbage and bridge, both of which I want to learn. This is a warning call to the old people in my life. my elders, let's be polite.
Yeah.
I intend that you will teach me how to do that.
My grandma did not. She said, what am I going to be, one of those women that goes and plays bridge?
I feel like that's cool. That's,
exactly.
I think that's very cool. There was a young adult fiction book that I read. Okay, I don't remember the name of it because it was so important to me. But it was like about this kid learning to play bridge, and he like got really good.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like younger, but he was like, you know, with his elders in this bridge club, and just the politics of bridge. Did I mm-hmm. fully understand it? No, it's a very difficult game to understand. There's a column in the newspaper about how hard it is.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if...
Is it a weekly?
No, in the Seattle Times, there's like a daily bridge play.
Oh, daily, okay.
There's a daily bridge play. Don't get the physical paper anymore. I'm sure there's a lot of websites. I'm sure there's an entire subculture of bridge that I don't know about.
I do like cribbage. It's cool.
Cribbage is cool? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this is fantastic.
We play a lot of bananagrams in my family.
Ooh, that's, I haven't, I spend a lot of time alone, so I'm more of a one word. That sounds so weird, but it's not. It's just, online games are definitely my way of going. But maybe we get to play together in the new year, in the upcoming new year sometime.
Oh, I'd love to play. I'm really good at bananagrams.
This is a January problem.
I don't want to threaten you, but I am very good.
Uh-oh. Well,
yeah, and here's a tip. We got a couple minutes left. If you're somebody who's competitive, maybe before you enter a competition of a card game or a board game or something, think about your audience. Think about reeling it in, thinking that, oh, grandma can still play. Nobody's going to flip the board. Nobody's going to get too excited because
it's
the holidays. It's just a game. Have a separate game with your cousins later if you really need to figure out.
A 15-minute walk around
the park. If you really need to figure out who's supreme, you know. But that's, I'm giving that tip out, and I'm also giving that to myself. I'm like, hey, reel it in a little bit, pal.
Yeah, I think I've heard Monopoly being a game that can, like, break families apart.
Oh, yeah. I got a sister who loves being the banker, and we played this game one time. This is not just, like, Monopoly story hour. But there's, like, a thing on the cards, like, when you buy a hotel. Like, basically, if you have everything in the Monopoly, it says, like, if you have all of the cards, the rent is doubled, but that's until you put houses and hotels on it. But we didn't abide by that rule, so it was like exorbitantly expensive. It was like double, triple what you're supposed to pay at any given time.
It's like living in Portland.
And she was like extorting my aunt.
That's,
and we're like just pay it up, we gotta get out of here.
At least you know who you're dealing with. I like that.
Yeah,
showing you who there she really is. But yes, for our community questions, the lines are still open for the last few moments that we have left here.
Talking about holidays.
Holidays.
Anxieties.
Stress.
Tips. Dealing with it.
On how to deal with it. Anything. We got a great comment about including our elders and giving them space to talk also.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very easy for us to take up space and not like take a second to... you know, kind of provide a stage for someone else to perform and talk with us.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, but the phone number for the last few moments, 503-231-8187. Oh, we're really running out of time.
Yeah, we're coming up on it. If anyone wants to squeeze in, you're welcome. But yeah, I've appreciated talking through it because I feel like it's like not until I'm driving to the holiday location that I'm like, oh boy, I should have thought about this stuff. Oh boy, I should have maybe... had a pre-phone call saying like, hey, you know, can we do it this way this year? I'd love to just participate in this one particular aspect, you know?
I have a thing I'm invited to, and I just said yes, and then immediately was like, oh, I didn't ask who's there. I didn't ask how many people. I didn't ask anything. And at this point, I'm just like, if I'm walking in and there's, the vibes aren't right, I'm just going to be like, oh, I got to get this phone call, and I'll just go home. Yeah. Like, and I think that's
Irish
fine.
Goodbye.
That's fine. Yeah. It's like, oh, my dog.
Yeah. Also, I had one last thought about gift giving.
Yes.
We're almost out of time. Food can be a gift.
Ooh.
People don't always do that, but I'm like very much like finding out if people in my family are gluten-free so I can just throw together a focaccia.
Oh, yeah. Food is...
Food's
like that.
Food's a great gift.
Yes.
Food's a great
Water,
gift.
Water, flour, add
yeah.
a little bit of sugar, something.
You make me a loaf of bread. I eat for like 3 days. I'm so happy.
Oh, jams also.
Jam
I got a jam
great.
And I'm so stoked about it.
Yeah.
I'm very happy.
Sweet.
Well, I guess this is going to be the end of the program. I'm sorry, there is someone calling, but I won't be able to take the call.
We can pick it up in a sec, maybe.
We will pick it up and we'll talk to you afterwards if that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. But I just want to remind everyone again, we are in our end of the year fundraiser and we are counting on you to make a donation and keep programming like this and other ones up on the air and thriving. We need your donation, and you can go to kboo.fm/give to make it, or text KBOO to 44321. This has been The Gap. My name is Tammy. The beautiful, jubilant, genius Althea Billings is in studio with me. Coming up next is Veterans Voice, and we are very stoked to be here. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend, and take care.
Thanks, everybody.
I'm Queen Ida, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on your radio. Your spot for Cajun and Zydeco music. Bon ton roulette.
Working as good as I am.
So this is Christmas. And what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun.